that thing to find about his life came from sort of, I might say, secondhand information, was from his niece Helen Lilly, who gave him this nice photograph, two nice photographs of Henry. I guess I don't think they had the Search for Spirit article down there, all right, but nevertheless, I guess you have a copy or I could send you one. And also from conversations I had with her uncle, I think she really knew about that he apparently was always on the highly inebriated. And then in the report that was originally made to the Taylor Society in 1933, when they wanted to have an exhibition at Stevens in honor of Taylor's 50th anniversary of Taylor's graduation from Stevens, they looked for Schmidt and couldn't find him. But the chief of police did send him a report to say that he was positive that Schmidt had to be dead because of excessive drinking and carousing with women. Schmidt also built his house on Martin's Lane in Bethlehem, right above the firehouse, because in Pennsylvania, if you wanted to get a drink on a Sunday, probably not now, but then you had to go to a volunteer fire company, it's the only place that had liquor that you could get. And he was a member of, I think it's Alliance Company number one. And he just had his house upstairs. Well, when I talked to the funeral director, he said, well, he said, of course, Henry would just roll, sort of make it down the hill and then drink it. Then they just put him on a fire truck and take him back up to the house and dump him off. So outside that, I've tried to find a lot about Noel, but he just was like one of these workmen and laborers, or maybe the rest of life, that just didn't leave much of a mark. And I just don't know anything about him. I can tell you one thing, and when the government investigated, when there was the story that Schmidt had died from overwork, and Taylor sent Wadley up there to see if Schmidt was alive, they found that he was working for a graphite company in Bethlehem, and he was moving 300-pound barrels of graphite. And so they asked him, isn't this heavier than moving pig iron? Well, he says, yes, he said, but you can always roll the graphite, and you don't have to be sober enough to pick it up. But I have these two photographs of my office of Schmidt that was taken in 1899, and I have a photograph that was taken in 1914, 15 years later. And you can see that there's a big change in this man who was 14 years, and it probably is like, all these actors that you see that die from over drinking too much, well, I guess that's what happened to poor old Henry. That's probably why he worked so hard moving the pig iron in the first place. He's a buck, buy the liquor.
Thank you. Any more questions? Chuck, before we let go, I've told the group about your dissertation at NYU and your work at Hawthorne. How long did it take you to complete your dissertation?
I can't hear the end of what you said, though.
How long did it take you to complete your dissertation?
I started in 1958 and I finished in 1960.
And how long was your dissertation?
800 pages.
800 pages. I told them 600 pages, but I thought that would be a good example for each of them to follow.
All right. I found out, of course, when I got done, I'd only scratched the surface,
Who was your chairman?
Oh, I had a fellow named John Glover, and the reason I got him, by the way, if they look at that, they'll find out a lot about old Tom Edison. Not a lot, but that's how I got interested in old Edison, because I found if it wasn't for Tom, the Hawthorne stuff never would have happened. And luckily, I had an advisor who had been Edison's accountant and who had loaned Edison the money in the 20s when he was Glover was a millionaire, had money in cash. And he loaned Edison the money to pull him out of the red, but then he and Edison had a breakup over it because he had a very hard job collecting some of his money back. There's a lot of legal problems here. And when I found out that Edison was involved in the Hawthorne stuff, he gave me carte blanche to go ahead and look for anything I wanted. So I first had a guy by the name of Arthur Spence and just wanted to find out something about Hawthorne that everybody knew anyway. Then luckily I found this, that no one ever read this the article by Snow in 1927. Everybody cited it, but never really ever read it. Once I read it, I found Edison was involved. And once I told John Glover that, then he was only delighted. We find out what the story is about. Then only then did I find out that he's the guy that bankrolled Edison when he was almost bankrupt in the 20s. And that's how I was able to get off and sort of do what I liked and hunt and search a lot without a lot of restrictions.
The group was kind of interested in your background. I mentioned your work in the service and then your study at the New School. Can you tell us something about the New School when you were there?
Oh, well, when I was at the New School, I got to the New School because my name is Reg, see? In German, that's Rega. And at that time, the New School took almost only, there were two categories of people there, German and Jewish. That was the categories of the New School. However, well, they might take an Estonian or a Latvian because they didn't want any real Americans if they could get them. They didn't want them around. And so, almost all the faculty members were German origin or Jewish German origin. But the whole atmosphere was that sort of thing. I had a guy, I can't remember his name, the guy who maneuvered Lenin in a boxcar across Germany, the guy I had for a sociology course. He had these interesting characters. And, of course, I had Salman Yash, who I could never stand because I think we spent two semesters studying the lines. He had about 50,000 versions of the line experiments. You could only take it so many nights, but after two semesters, you can't really take it anymore. You had to read this book for the course on social psychology. Spent the whole semester talking about the line experiment, and on top of that, you had every evening when he came up from Swarthmore, where Dorothy Dinnerstein, his assistant, they spent all, 15 minutes trying to figure out how to get started and what they did that day, and Ash smoking his pipe, and he and Dinnerstein trying to figure out where they'd been all day, doing something. Without Dinnerstein, he couldn't get moving. He was a necessary appendage to this whole program, and it was, in a way, very disappointing to me. I liked the New School because you got a chance to meet a lot of different people and do a lot of odd work. I wrote a paper on psychological warfare with a Saul K. Padover, who was really a fascinating character. And I wrote a paper on treason and loyalty for a guy by the name of White, who was trying to investigate McCarthy when he was supposed to honor him. And it was the time he was not supposed to investigate him. This is before Welch and all that. The revelations about McCarthy. And the New School had that sort of nice atmosphere. But it did have these characters. And of course, I've always been fascinated what Dorothy Dinnerstein ever really did for the dissertation because it was sealed from the day she finished it. And I just haven't got back to New York to go to the New School and look and see if that dissertation's on the shelf. And I think I'll put it to send a student there to do it and see what Dinnerstein really did write about.
Why would they seal a dissertation?
I have no idea, unless it's blank pages. I've been at cocktail parties at other places in my lifetime, like at NYU, and learned a lot about dissertations that have blank pages that they see for guys who are colonels and want to be made generals. And our army has some deal with the university to give them that degree on some sort of swap basis for money. They give a grant and then the colonel becomes a general and then also does a dissertation and gets a PhD and gets a job at some university. There's probably a whole hidden world of this stuff going on that we don't even know about. You have to get to a cocktail party where guys brag about how little they ever did in life. That's how I found out.
Is that what happened to Jack Breschlein at Ohio State?
My name and 35 blank pages. So you find all these Well, these guys were proud of having done nothing, and they were all bragging about it.
Time for one more question.
All right.
One more question.
Dr. Ray, this is an important question because I might get some bonus points from Dr.
Go ahead. I can't hear. Go ahead.
I said this is an important question because I might get some bonus points for it. We have a picture in our class of Henry Towne, and he has this funny looking hat. I was wondering if you could tell us what the hat of the time was that he was wearing.
And before you do, tell him where you found out.
Me?
You.
Well, I can't answer that question for the very simple reason that Art has informed me that's a draftsman's hat. However, since Art has told me that, that has made me decide to look into draftsmen more carefully. There may be a story behind that hat we don't know about. Maybe it means something else, but I'm awfully glad that Art has found this little connection because I'm very pleased that I'm finding what that hat meant. I never knew, and Art's been looking for it for at least a year or two, as far as I can recall. At least he's found more than we have, found at Grant's hat. But I'm also hoping that might lead to another story. I'm thinking of looking into that more to see what that means. It may mean more than we think, because Bart was a draftsman too there. Bart didn't wear that hat, so it has to be a higher class of draftsman, I imagine.
Well, you shot my theory. Maybe it's not a draftsman's hat.
What?
Maybe it's not, then, if Barth didn't wear it. He was a mathematician, I thought.
Yeah, but he also was a draftsman at Sellers for a while. But maybe he was only a junior draftsman. I don't know, but I just like to know more about it. I'm awfully glad, Art, that you did find that. I'm very appreciative. Always appreciative. But I think your students ought to learn that every little piece of information has a possibility behind it. They shouldn't discard it too fast.
Thank you.
Take every little scrap what you find and see what it's worth.
Well, they're learning a lot of trivia with me, believe me.
What?
They're learning a lot of trivia with me. Do you have anything you'd like to tell us before we hang out?
Me?
You.
Well, I'm awfully glad I had the opportunity to talk to you people, and I think they have a good opportunity by having you run this sort of seminar. And if there's any other questions they want to ask or think they want a clarification, I'm one of these people who likes to write letters. If I get a person to ask me enough questions, I can give them sort of answer. And my address is, you know my address. I'm perfectly willing to give my address and give my phone number too. If they want to call me and want to talk privately about it, I'll tell them anything they want to know.
Sounds like a deal.
I'm a person that keeps things in the dark.
Everybody like to join me in thanking Dr. Ray?
Thank you.
Have a good evening, Chuck.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
That worked. How about that?